Okay, we'll start with source number one. Go ahead.
Source number one, Maimonides, Mishneh Torah, Laws of Fast Days. Five tragedies occurred on the ninth of Av.
Five tragedies occurred on the ninth of Av, and one all in the same day in different generations. And history links all of them together because in Judaism we believe that good things come on good days. There is some lucky days and some unlucky days. That God gathered all the lucky days and all the good things came on lucky days, and the bad things came on one and a few unlucky days. Then this is he's counting now what are the things that happened on Tisha B'Av.
The Israelites in the desert were decreed not to enter the land of Israel.
Okay, the first of all, when the Jewish people in the desert, the spies, when they came back from Israel, and they gave the report that the Jewish people are, then Israel is it's a very harsh land, Canaan is be impossible to conquer the land, the cities are fortified, the people are strong, and all the Jewish people, what they did? Started to cry. They cried that God told them, you're crying for nothing. I'll go with you. That first of all, that night God decided that the Jewish people, the decree came that the Jewish people will never enter the land. This generation will not enter the land of Israel. That was the decree of that night. Then this time, the story with the spies happened that the Jewish people, that this generation doesn't go into the land of Israel. That was the first tragedy. Why it was a tragedy? Not only because this generation didn't enter the land of Israel, because that was the beginning for the struggle over the land. See, it's something very interesting. You know, the Jewish people, there is two things in the Torah, it's written, that it's an inheritance to the Jewish people. What are the two inheritances that the Jewish people have?
One is land.
The Torah and the land. How we know the Torah? It's written, Torah, 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 Tziva. You know what it says? Morasha, Kilat Yaakov. The Torah is an inheritance for the Jewish people. Then this is an inheritance, and the land is an inheritance for the Jewish people. And we see something very different. Comes to the Torah, every child in preschool learns the verse, right? Every child, every Jewish person who has any connection to Judaism as a connection to the Torah, some level. Land of Israel, it's also inheritance. But the bottom line is, most of the Jews in the world, in Jewish history, were never in Israel. Why is it that one inheritance, everyone has a connection? Another inheritance, almost nobody has a connection. Were you ever in Israel? Were you ever in Israel? You were in Israel, yeah.
20 years ago.
20 years.
25 years ago.
Wow.
30.
Then.
92, 96.
I was close, but I didn't get there.
Never.
Like Moses.
Oy, oy.
There's still a chance. Then I heard once from a rabbi. He said something amazing. He said, when God offered the Torah to the Jewish people, what he said? Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do and we will listen, right?
That's what they said.
The Jewish people.
Yeah.
What they said when God offered them the land of Israel, we don't want it. God says, you don't want to.
It's too hard.
Don't do me any favors. There's in Hebrew an expression, in Yiddish, Moichel Toives. I forgive your favors. Don't do me any favors. No favors. We don't do God any favors. That's why the day, the first Tisha B'Av is not just a tragedy for this generation. For that generation of the desert. It's a tragedy for all generations because it started on the wrong and on the left foot. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have a question of the spies that you're talking about here. Did they come back on the 9th or did they leave on the 9th?
They came back with a bad report.
On the 9th.
On the 9th or the 8th in the evening. And the people cried that night. That night. That night is the 9th of Av.
Gotcha.
The night of the 9th of Av. It's this year will be Saturday night.
The destruction of the first and second temples?
Yeah, both of them happened on the night. Yeah.
I thought you said the 7th. That was the breach, right? Okay. The capture of a large city named Betar, which had many thousands of Jewish inhabitants, and a great king whom the entire people and the leading sages considered to be Mashiach.
Okay. Betar. You ever heard about the movement, Betar movement?
Yeah. It's a young, military type of...
Yes, a very strong supporting Israel.
When was that?
Betar was 52 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. What happened is the Jewish people believed at that time, you see, when the Roman destroyed the temple, at that point, in the beginning, when they destroyed the temple, we'll talk about that next week, but they just burned the temple. That's stones, you cannot burn it. They burned whatever it was burned, but the rest of the building was still standing there.
That was the Greeks, not the Romans.
No, even the Romans,
okay,
in the beginning. The Romans, they had the temple. And what happened is, 50 years later, there was a king. What was the name of the king? Bar Kokhba.
Oh, this was the Bar Kokhba.
Bar Kokhba revolution.
Oh, okay.
He started revolution. Rabbi Akiva was the one who believed that he can be the Moshiach. He can bring Moshiach. He can be Moshiach. Yeah, yeah. And he started a strong revolution. And in the beginning, he was very successful. And there is coins that he made when he got sovereignty over Israel. And then the problem, what happened? He became too arrogant. He said, "Well, we don't need God. As long as God doesn't bother us, it'll be good enough." You know what happened, and then it goes this direction.
Two quick historical questions. Was Masada that time? Was that more? Was that
Yeah.
And the other issue, Akiba actually may have believed that he could have been the Messiah.
That Bar Kokhba could be the Messiah.
Right. I'm just kind of
surprised. I'll tell you. My commentary to this is, Bar Kokhba would be almost the physical Messiah, and Rabbi Akiva the spiritual Messiah.
That makes sense.
I mean, Bar Kokhba would do the revolution, the conquering the land, and Rabbi Akiva will lead the spiritual revolution. And this will bring the Moshiach. You understand what I'm saying? That's my personal commentary to the story. I don't think they thought Bar Kokhba will be the full Moshiach in the full sense of the word. They felt he will bring 70, they will rebuild the temple. That was the dream. They thought they will rebuild the temple and everything will come back to the good old days. See, 50 years after the destruction of the temple, they didn't look at it as, it's forever. We'll never build a temple again. This idea settled in later, because when they saw the reality... Now what happened there, not only it was a destruction, then the worst, the Romans came in, it was much worse than the destruction of the Second Temple. Many more people were killed. It was terrible. That's what he says. Many thousands and tens of thousands were killed. And that happened on Tisha B'Av. Go ahead, continue.
It fell to the Romans and they were all slain, a catastrophe equal to the temple's destruction.
Here you go, a catastrophe equal to the temple.
Also on that day, which is designated for retribution, the wicked Tineus Rufus plowed the site of the temple,
the site of the temple.
And its surroundings, thereby fulfilling the prophecy, Zion will be plowed like a field.
Oh, here, that's what happened, that's what... The Romans had a way, if they conquer a place and they want to show that we mean business, is to plow the place. Level that. They destroyed everything, and then they destroyed the whole building completely. To get out all your dreams. You have dreams to build a temple, we'll show you.
What prophecy?
There is a Jeremiah, before the destruction of the temple, prophesied to the Jewish people that if they don't do tshuva, the temple will be destroyed and everything will happen. It was not a surprise for the Jews that this is going to happen. The prophets warned them many, many times. Just like Dushinsky is a prophet, there were prophets in that time. Jeremiah was a prophet.
I need more coffee.
then it's not just like today when we see trends are going the wrong direction. There too. It wasn't like in one day, the Romans came, destroyed the temple. It was a demise of the Jewish people for generations. And Jeremiah stood and told them, guys, it was the first temple. And the beginning of the demise started right after Solomon. When Solomon died, there was a splitting of the two kingdoms. Israel was one kingdom, and it was the kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah, the ten tribes and the two tribes. The beginning, and then the ten tribes, Jeroboam closed the ways to Jerusalem. That was the beginning of the end. Took 300 years. But the time of Jeremiah, he told the Jews, if you don't return, if you don't repent, if you don't do what God wants, that was going to happen. Then when it happened, they said, oh, that's what Jeremiah said 600 years ago, or 500 years ago. See, Jeremiah was before the destruction of the first temple. This is 52 years, even more, after the destruction of the second temple. But the Jewish people said, oh, that's what they said. God is like a good father. Is Ma'arich Haf, it's called. He lets you go. He gives you another chance, another chance, another chance, another chance. Maybe, maybe, maybe. And then it was fulfilled. Therefore, okay. Want to continue? Yeah.
When Av begins, we reduce our joy. Jews customarily do not eat meat or enter a bathhouse during this week until after the fast.
Oh, then during this week of the 9th of Av, it's beginning next week. The 9 days from Rosh Chodesh Av until the 9th of Av, the custom is from the beginning of Av, we are reducing the amount of joy. We are still happy, but we're just reducing it. It's more a time of kind of mourning, feeling of mourning settles into the Jewish people. It's actually Rosh Chodesh Av is this coming Shabbos. Then in Shabbat, we never allow to be sad or to do any sign of sadness. But from Sunday, from Saturday night until the next Shabbat, this is the 9 days that we don't eat meat and we don't drink wine and we don't, in the daytime, people didn't take care, we didn't go to the bathtub, you understand? And in the bathhouse, people used to go at that time, it was a big deal. Once a month, used to go to take a bath. It wasn't like
the Schwitz.
Yeah, it was exactly. Going to the Schwitz, a perfect example. It wasn't like today, people take showers 3 times a day. Continue.
The night of Tish B'Av is just like its day. We eat only before sunset, and the time between sunset and nightfall is forbidden like Yom Kippur.
Yeah, Tish B'Av will be Saturday night, the Shabbos after. Not this coming Saturday night, the second Saturday night. 2 weeks from 17. Yeah, 2 weeks from last night.
Everything is early. Like I know Tish B'Av, usually it's in August. And
yes, this year it's very early, you're right. Next year everything will be late. You know the problem with the Jews? It's never on time. It's too early, it's too late.
You get that extra month.
Yeah, next year.
Leap month.
Leap year. It's an extra month in the leap year. The year is the leap year. Okay, continue.
It is forbidden to wash in either hot or cold water, even to place one's finger in water. Anointing oneself for pleasure, wearing shoes and intercourse are forbidden, as on Yom Kippur. In places where it is customary to do work, one may work. In places where it is not customary to work, one should not. Torah scholars everywhere remain idle on this day. Our sages said, whoever performs work on this day will never see us.
Okay, it tells us what's not allowed to do on Tisha B'Av. Basically, the same thing like Yom Kippur. Not allowed to wash yourself. You're not allowed to anoint yourself. Wear shoes like Yom Kippur. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Then we don't wear shoes, just like Yom Kippur. I mean, leather shoes. We can wear shoes, but not leather shoes, just like Yom Kippur. And we don't have relations on the night of Tisha B'Av.
What does it mean, Rabbi, when it says, where it is customary to do work, one may work? And then it says,
it means to say it's not a yontif. You're allowed to work on Tisha B'Av. I'm allowed to drive. I'm allowed to ride.
But it says whoever performs work on this
day. Now we tell you, rabbis give you good advice.
I see.
You want to be successful in business? Don't work. A blessing will not come out from this job. If you try to do a business deal, a bad opportunity, a bad time to try it. Wait a few hours. Wait till the day is over. Then you'll have more success. If you fix somebody, you give him a therapy session. You might twist the other side, the other arm. Not a good idea.
Oh my God! So this is gonna be
it's Sunday
on the week. So it's like 17th, 18th, or something like this 17th. This weekend.
Yeah. One day, Monday, Sunday.
Oh my God!
What is this? You have
I have national competition in bridge on this weekend. So
Hashem will help you. I'll pray for you. As long as
we're gonna lose.
As long as you don't eat and drink.
No, actually, we have like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it's a preliminary. So if we'll get to finals, it will be Saturday and Sunday.
So okay, here is the deal. If you have something on Sunday, if you don't eat, if you fast on Tisha B'Av, Hashem will help you, going to win.
That's actually okay. Okay.
That's a deal.
I heard it from the man.
Yeah, but now I cannot promise you. I'm not God. I'll pray.
No.
I'll pray.
That's it. Written.
Yeah, and for some of you here, you if you play well the bridge, you'll have Trump on your side, yeah. Right?
Now Trump is in there.
They use that suit in the bridge.
I got what
you're saying. I didn't know. Okay. Okay, finish this piece.
Oh, my. Torah scholars do not exchange greetings on Tish B'Av. Instead, they sit in sadness and lament like mourning.
Yeah, then if you don't even say hello on Tish B'Av morning, like you don't say hi, shake hand, things like this. It's a morning. Okay, now we'll read from the book of Jeremiah in what Rashi, the Medrash, says about it. Please.
Wild donkey accustomed to the desert, snuffing up the wind in eagerness. Her passion none can restrain. All who seek her need not grow weary. In her mouth they will find her.
A very strange verse in the Bible. Talking about a donkey that everybody wants to get her, but she's so fast, she's so strong, nobody can control her. But there is one month, and she's weak, and in this month, you can get her. Let's continue the commentary to it, Rashi.
In her month, they will find her. She sleeps for 1 month every year, and then she is captured. For you, too, 1 month, Av, has been established since the days of the spies, when your forefathers chose to cry in vain. And then you will be captured.
It means to say, what he says here like this, just like this animal, the prophet, they always speak in metaphor. He says, Rashi explains, well, what is he talking about? He says, just like this animal who sleeps for a month, and that's the time to catch him. The Jewish people have a weak month, the month of Av, until after Tisha B'Av, then it's good luck. But this month, the beginning of the month, is not good luck for the Jewish people. That they could be catched, so to speak. Then this is
so the Rebbe's going to flip it all.
Oh, exactly.
This is brilliant.
Okay, Rebbe Bridge, go ahead.
What is comforting about Av? The name is upcoming in 1 month as listed in the Jewish legal documents, and as we recite in the blessing of the new month, is Menachem Av. In fact, according to some opinions, the month should be called Menachem alone.
Menachem Av. Menachem means, the regular name is Av. Av means father, by the way. The Jewish tradition gave the name, added to the name, to the month, Menachem. Menachem means comforting. The name Menachem, the Rebbe's name Menachem. My son is named after the Rebbe, yeah. So many Mendes, they're all Menachem Mendel. The word Menachem means comforting. Like Nichum Avelim, comforting the mourners. And that's why Shabbat after Tisha was called Shabbat Nachamu. The Shabbat, so it's all about comforting. Then they add to the whole month, not just to after Tisha B'Av. All month is became not the month of mourning, the month of comforting. You understand? Okay, continue.
Our sages said that the Jewish custom is considered like Torah. The name is used among Jewish people in Torah and in Jewish tradition, including a legal document written up according to Torah law. It implies that in reality, there is something comforting, Menachem, about the month of Av.
See, the word Menachem comes before the month of Av. That there is something comforting about this old story of the destruction of the temple. How could you say that the destruction of the, there is something comforting?
Absolutely, that's a question. I mean, it's like everything,
everything is bad,
yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yes, must be. That's why we have a Rebbe. It must be something good about it.
If you assume that it will be rebuilt even better and stronger.
He's trying to be the Rebbe. Give the Rebbe a chance.
Yeah, just a couple.
I'm just trying to think. How can you possibly twist it that it's got to be a bit something like that?
You have to give the Rebbe talk, boys. Go read the next
one. But now is a month of comfort. It seems to be a month of the opposite, Jeremiah says. In her month, they will find her. Implying that Menachem Av is a month of bad omens for the Jewish people. That's what our rabbi just said like 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. According to Jewish tradition, we reduce our joy during this month. Joyous events are customarily delayed to the next month, and yet we call it Menachem Av, and then we bless the new month. We say, renews for us with joy. This joy begins even before the month begins.
Oh, no. Then what's going on here? It says, on one end, we say it's a month to reduce joy. We don't do weddings, we don't do anything. You don't do any happy occasion. On the other end, yesterday we said the blessing for the new month, right? Mm-hmm. What did he say? We said, may bring a past the month of joy, one of the things. The sosa in the simcha, for joy and gladness. Right? Then we're praying for the month should be for joy, but it's a contradiction. And we call it Menachem Ov, it's a comfort that make up your mind. What's going on? Okay. The rabbi gives one explanation. Go ahead.
God spent his fury on the temple. One possible explanation can be found in...
Give me a second. I need to make it a little cooler. I'm a little warm. I'm never good. Oh, I have to hold on. Sorry.
Just my wife with her hot flashes. She's got 20 years of hot flashes. Poor kid.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
One possible explanation can be found in Rashi's comment on Bilaam's statement, how good are your tents, O Israel? Rashi says that the tabernacle and the temple are a source of blessing even when destroyed, because they serve as a security for you. Their destruction atones for your souls. As it says, God has spent his fury. How did he spend it? He has kindled a fire in Zion. In other words, the destruction of the temple in the month of Av serves as a security for the eternal survival of the Jewish people, and therefore the destruction itself is a source of comfort. It might be a bitter medicine, but it is a medicine nonetheless. However, this would only explain why the destruction itself is a source of comfort, not the entire month of Av every year.
There's something very, a few interesting things there. Yeah. Many interesting things. First of all, the famous line, what he's talking about in the prophecy of Bilaam, is the famous line, Matovu alecha Yaakov, Mishkenotecha Israel, right? Chazen. Mishkenotecha Israel literally means, from the word Mishkan. Mishkan means a place that you can live, you can dwell. That's why the word Mishkan is. Mishkan means like a home, like a place to dwell. But Mishkan is a second meaning in Hebrew. That's interesting. In Hebrew, Mishkan comes the word Mashkon. Mashkon is collateral. Take a collateral.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I give you money, you give me your watch.
Security.
A security, exactly. Then they said, then the Talmud says, then the two temples, the two, they were called, the Mishkan in the desert was called Mishkan, Mishkenotecha. There are two, and here it's plural, because the temple in Jerusalem even is called a Beit HaMikdash, but it's also the same meaning, it's a continuation of the Mishkan. The two Mishkans were destroyed, they are a Mashkon, they are collateral for the existence of the Jewish people. They are a guarantor that we will exist. What does this mean? As you're going to learn in a minute, God had two options, to destroy the Jewish people or to destroy the temple. And by taking out his anger, so to speak, on the Jewish people, on the temple, he saved the Jewish people. What does this mean? Guys, I want to tell you something very interesting. Should I tell you it now, or should I tell you that after we learn the two things?
No, that would be good.
I'll tell you something. Something very interesting. I heard once on the Rebbe. One day maybe it will be one of the classes. We'll see. Something very interesting. What does this mean? God destroyed the temple instead of the Jewish people. God gave us 613 commandments. He saw that the Jewish people cannot handle all the commandments. And every day they don't do it, the clock is ticking. Like you owe money to the credit card company. And every day, there is accumulating interest, right? It's getting worse and worse and worse. How you solve the problem? God cannot change the law. He says they have to do the mitzvahs. God cannot, even God himself cannot change the law. Well, what could he change?
The number of mitzvahs that you can do.
The reality. You understand?
He took the temple away.
He changed the reality. I'll give you an example. Let's say it's a mitzvah to put on every day, put on film every day. But if somebody does not have a hand, God forbid, he cannot put on film. He's not is exempt. What does this mean? He didn't change that film. He changed the reality. You have a mitzvah to put on a mezuzah on your door. If you live in a tent, you don't have to put up a mezuzah. And the sukkah does need a mezuzah, you understand? Then God cannot change the law, but he can change the reality. He saw that the Jewish people cannot live up to the mitzvahs. He said every day that they're getting, it's getting worse and worse. I'll take away from them the temple. Taking away the temple from the Jewish people was the biggest favor to the Jewish people. In a round and about way. We're going to speak about it next week because it's mainly the same topic in many ways. That was the only way God did a favor to the Jewish people. Then, and by this that he destroyed the temple, he made a statement that was a question, what's more important to him, the temple or the people? You know, I spoke to once a guy, I want a job, I'm going to move. I told him, but your wife doesn't want you, you have to get divorced. I told him, what's more important to you, your wife, your marriage, or your job? That's the bottom line. And this is on so many things. People have Sholem Bayis problems. When you clean up the mess, then what's more important to you, this or this? They give excuses for me until next week. But for many people, the job, why do you think so many young people don't get married so late? The career is more important than the marriage. Then guys, always they can find a young girl. One who really gets eaten up by this, suffers from it more, are the women. I talk to many parents, I want my daughter to get married. So then let her come to a city that there is people. No, but your career, she has to. That's the point. What's more important to you? God had a dilemma. He had to make a choice. The temple or the Jews. These two things cannot coexist because the Jews don't respect the temple. So let's forget about the temple. I want the Jews. That the Jews are a guarantor. The destruction of the temple was the biggest statement. Then the Jews are number one on his priorities. The temple is like God's job, career. The Jews are God's wife, right? We are married to God. He made the choice. Your wife comes first. That's the bottom line.
So what happened to that concept of security?
Never. Perfect. That's why we are here. What do you think?
No. I'm saying, did they use up the security? Or just the promise of the third
one? It's forever. We are going to be here forever.
No, the
question is if we will be there forever. The Jewish people as a whole will be here forever.
As long as we stay the caring wife, right?
No matter what, no. We'll never be divorced. Okay. Never, never, never. Don't worry.
Okay,
it's guaranteed. Let's turn the page to page 6. We'll read the top piece.
Your dwelling places, they are good even when they are destroyed, because they serve as a security for you. Their destruction atoned for your souls, as it says, God has spent his fury. How did he spend it? He has kindled a fire in Zion.
By burning the temple, this is like, first of all, it's a reminder to us to be better. And also, it tells us it's a guarantor and other security.
Dwelling places can also be translated as security or collateral.
Yes. Continue.
God has spent his fury, poured out his blazing wrath. He has kindled a fire in Zion, which has consumed her foundations.
Continue.
Torah Tamima commentary. Which has consumed her foundations. Psalm states, a psalm of Asaph. O God, heathens have entered your domain. Asaph was asked, God destroyed the sanctuary and temple, and you sit here and sing? He responded, I sing because he spent his fury on sticks and stones and not on the people of Israel.
There is a verse, a chapter in the book of Psalms, chapter 79, that describes the destruction of the temple. But it starts with the word Mizmor le'Asaf, a song for Asaf. Then the Talmud is asking, a song for Asaf? A lamentation for Asaf? What is the Asaf is a name of a poet, you understand? And he starts this chapter, a song for Asaf. God, they destroyed, what's the joy? What are you dancing me? What are you singing? He says, I'm singing, God didn't destroy the Jewish people. That's what I'm singing. When he made the choice between the two, that this is one explanation why Menachem Av, what's the comforting in the month of Av? That God chose the Jews over the temple. It's a huge comfort. But the Rebbe says, this is good for the first year when he made the choice. Where is the comforting on every year? Today, 2021, in Solon, Ohio. Where is, why it's called Menachem Av? At this point, you're remembering the destruction, we should be sad. Where is the Menachem? Where is the comforting?
We're here.
Go ahead. There's something better than just we are here. Give him patience. Give patience.
I'll just finish. He has kindled a fire in Zion which has consumed her foundation.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't finish.
Rabbi, maybe, I know this is a beta thing, but maybe you should put down Psalm 79 states.
Oh, it's not written in the English?
I didn't see it.
Uh-huh. You're right. Psalm states. Oh, to people, if people want to know where it is.
Yeah, that would make maybe, sense.
Yeah, that makes more official. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. We will talk to the editor. I actually know him very well.
He just spoke.
He's sitting upstairs there in the office. Okay. Go ahead.
We don't stop awaiting a better time. The explanation. In Jewish law, 3 years constitutes a chazaka, permanent. We have been in exile for far longer. We should have become accustomed to the state of exile.
We see a strange phenomenon among the Jewish people. So many years in exile, and we're still crying, and we're still mourning the temple. That's unbelievable. What is it? That's what the Rebbe is trying to talk about. Nonetheless,
we see that the Jewish people have maintained a yearning and desire to leave the exile throughout this time, even when living in free countries which do not hamper Jewish life. This is not only a thought. We verbalize our desire 3 times a day during the Amidah. Cause the Zion of David to flourish. May our eyes behold your return to Zion. Blessed are you who restores his divine presence to Zion.
Let's stop for a second. Here it says, when you are sitting in, Jewish people have constantly a yearning to go back to Israel. We pray in the prayers, we say it in every prayer 3 times a day, and we think about it. We constantly, even people who live in America, in good countries, and life is great. In Solon, Ohio, Moshiach is coming here. What do you need to go? There is in every Jew a yearning to go to visit Israel to see. We all hoping for Moshiach to come and rebuild the temple. What is it? Continue. And also,
whenever 10 Jews gather to pray, these statements are publicly declared by the prayer leader. And of course, we say it sincerely. After all, God sees directly into our hearts. So who would be the fool to pray without being sincere about the very words he says? Now, our sages have said that when we were exiled to Edom, God accompanied us. In our day, God is primarily found in exile with us, which gives us an advantage over the land of Israel. Why then do we yearn to return?
This is something very powerful. God went with the Jews to exile. God didn't send the Jews to exile. He went with the Jews to exile. Then the question is, if God is with us, and for 1,000 years there were no Jews in Israel, God goes with ever the majority, so to speak, wherever Jew goes, especially when the majority of the Jews are in one place, that God is, the presence of God is stronger, is more tangible, if you want. You know, why we pray in a synagogue, not in home? God is home. Therefore, the presence of God is more tangible in a synagogue. The presence of God is more tangible, so to speak, because America is the majority of the Jewish people. Even today, more than is in Israel. All the same. But the point is, especially during most of the time of exile, then what do we mourning, yearning to go to Israel? We have God with us. God came with us. What's so bad? Wherever Jewish people come and set up a temple and learn Torah and have a Jewish day school and eat kosher meat and live a Jewish life, God comes with them. Then what do you have to go to Israel? What's wrong here? Life is good here. Why we still have the yearning to go there? Okay, you want to continue?
Also, what is the purpose of longing? As my father-in-law, the previous rabbi, famously said, we didn't choose to be exiled, nor can we choose to be redeemed. Ultimately, we need to wait for God to send Mashiach. So why bother yearning for the redemption?
You see, anyway, you cannot get it. It's not up to me. I mean, it's up to me by doing mitzvahs. But yearning, what's the point of yearning, of driving yourself crazy? Oh, Mashiach should come. I can't wait. I want to...
Well, that's what keeps people going alive, hope.
Hope? Life is bad in Solon, tell me. Hope.
You always hope for more, hope for better.
Hope for more, you know, hope for better money, hope for better life. I mean,
better, closer to God, whatever.
Closer to God. You can pray for closer to God. But what is the... What gives you the yearning? That's what he's asking. What is the yearning gives you? Some Rebbe says something amazing. And that's what you're going to say. Go ahead, continue.
The yearning itself is a source of comfort. The explanation. The yearning itself is a source of comfort when we recall what we've been in exile for 1900 years and therefore yearn for the redemption. It serves as a source of comfort. It reminds us that the work is almost done and very little remains. We will conclude God's mission and leave very soon.
Yearning for something is a source of comfort. Understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
Think about that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
When you talk about, let's say your child is out of town, and you talk about them, it gives you, it's not just makes you aggravated. Why you talk about it? Because talking about it fills in something, fills in a void.
It makes you look into the future positively.
Not only this, that moment that you speak about, that you feel later better about it.
You're connected.
You feel, God forbid, and you go to somebody who lost somebody. And you talk with them about the person we lost. When you leave, he tells you, thank you, you make me feel much better. Why? The yearning about them fills in a void. And waiting for Moshiach brings you there, you understand? To a point you are there. And that's why we are constantly praying about the temple, learning about the temple, discussing about the temple, the laws of the temple, the days of the temple. You don't have a temple for 2,000 years. Get over it. Talking about it to a certain point brings me down. And that's what it's all about. That's the comforting in the month of Av. The question was, what was the comforting in the month of Av? The answer is, by talking about it, I feel better. And everybody who ever missed someone, I talk about the Rebbe. What's the point? Talking about it, when we talk about the Rebbe, you feel more closer, you feel more connected. We talk about the temple, a Jew feels better after that. That the month of Av is not a month to come to depress us. Oy vey, oy, 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 we bring bad luck. Menachem Av. It's the comforting of Av. Learning about the temple. You know, this month, we have a custom to learn about the laws of the temple. And you learn the measurement and how it was built, and you learn the stories about it and how the operation. Not about the destruction so much, about the temple itself. I spoke about it last week. Talking about it makes you feel like you're there a little bit. It's to a certain point fulfilled a need. It's like people talk about a certain type of food that they like. But it doesn't make you more hungry. But talking about it still fulfills a need. That's why they do it. You want to continue?
The
longing, right?
The longing becomes even more powerful when it is verbalized. As we mentioned earlier, because it makes an impression on our animal souls. We even express our longing in our custom of refraining from eating and drinking, an element of our lives which binds the spiritual and the physical together. That is how Jewish people make the yearning tangible in a physical way. Therefore, when the month of Av arrives and the Jewish people remind themselves that they are in exile and the temple is destroyed, this alone brings a sense of comfort of Menachem Av. In that spirit, God abolishes our mourning, transforms it to joy, and in the words of Rashi, He will take every Jew by the hand from his place, as the verse says, you will be gathered up one by one, O children of Israel. We then have nothing to fear, and he will bring us to the true and complete redemption and the rebuilding of Jerusalem.
That means God himself is doing us, the Mount of Olives is a favor to the Jewish people. It's an opportunity to long for the temple and to fulfill a need that every Jew has. The more you talk about it, the better you feel about it. It's not making you more depressed. The Mount of Olives is not designed to depress people. Why not? Because there is a mitzvah to be happy. If do it Hashem v'simcha, a Jew is to serve God with joy every day of the year. Then how can you give us a month to depress us? You're supposed to serve God with joy. It's a therapy session. All Jewish people come together, you know, like you do in the therapy, it's what, a group therapy? It's the AA of the Jewish people. It's a therapy session. We come together, we sit on the floor, we fast, we cry for the temple, and when we leave, we feel better. That's what it is. And when you look at it this way, it's not here designed to make people cry, make people this. No! To we live upbeat, we live more inspired. It gives us strength to move on with the exile for another year. That's what it is.
But then nothing, I guess, in Jewish law then will make, if not that, will make people to cry, to feel kind of just responsible for something or whatever. I guess if not this part, then nothing probably in what we're learning.
Because we are not, God is not in the business of depressing the Jews.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they have enough reasons to be depressed. We don't need them. We don't need to look for reasons. They say, "Oh, I want to get depressed." We need reasons to get happy.
Spin the wheel. Which one do you want to land on?
You know, it's like people. And think about it. You always like to gravitate to people who are happy.
Yes.
I need your Torah. I have my own Torah. Oh, you tzoros, you cry. You have somebody that gives you a whole ear full of tzoros. I'm living like a king. I'm dying. Like. Sometimes in one day I hear so many tzoros, I can go crazy. You want to hear people are happy or happy.
Then, you usually hear tzoros. Tzoros is tzoros. Problems, that's another start to be depressed. But tzoros, it's like...
What tzoros?
Tzoros, it's a tragedy. It's something really, I mean, but...
My parents
always told me, don't use words tourist when it's something
little,
small.
And no, you're right. And what I'm saying is sometimes I hear, in my job, I hear so many tragedies that you can go crazy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You hear at work. All day long.
Try to be patient with people.
Yeah. Here comes the second piece, is another talk from the Rebbe about the same concept, the same idea. There is in Chabad a song, there is let's read it and we'll see what you're talking about it. Go ahead.
The rabbi yearning brings solace. From where?
Solace. What solace? Comfort.
Peace. And solace.
Okay.
You can find solace in this. Yeah.
Go ahead.
From where do we derive joy in our spiritual service? The answer is from yearning. When we thirst for closeness to God, the very yearning serves to quench our thirst.
Okay, I'll give you an example. The Rebbe, beside many, many, many of his qualities, was an unbelievable, was able to sing. He was an unbelievable singer.
Good.
He had a beautiful voice.
Really?
And he was able to sing. It was unbelievable how well he was singing. Hmm. It was just an amazing singer. It wasn't his job, it was his career. But when the Rebbe used to sing, then over the years, the Rebbe taught around 12, 13 new songs that Chabad did not know. Hasidim did not know. It was for like 10 years, I think. It was in 770, a tradition that Simchas Torah, after Hakafot, 6 o'clock in the morning, the Rebbe used to come down and teach a new song.
Wow.
The first, and when he was singing, it was heaven, heaven. I'm telling you, it was heaven. You need to understand, not every tzaddik needs to know everything, to sing and to do. The Rebbe was such an unusual combination. He had everything. So people ask me, who is the next Rebbe? Well, never in a million years will not be such a Rebbe. It was never a Rebbe like them before, and never be a Rebbe like it. Then the Rebbe was one of the song. One night, maybe the first song that he was teaching is "Tzomo L'chol Nafshi." My soul is yearning to you. It's with King David. It's a song that he learned from the that was a tradition that was the Alter Rebbe was singing, but Hasidim did not know. And the Rebbe heard it from his grandfather's city in Nikolaev. And actually, my niece married the boy that he got, that his father is a Chabad rabbi in Nikolaev now. But then they learned from this. The Rebbe brought this song to Chabad, basically, and it's an amazing song. I have it on my cell phone, and I will later play it to you. Oh, the Rebbe sings it, and it was the Rebbe singing the. Then he speaks about the Rebbe never just teaching songs because it's interesting. Every song has a meaning in the Hasidic world. There we say when we sing, we don't tell this person sing a song. We say say a song. A song, a tune, as a message. Every song in Chabad has a message. It's not just, oh, that's a beautiful tune, let's jump. Every song has a lesson, has a message, has an inspirational song, a song to make you think, a song to make you happy. Especially song with words, the words of the Book of Psalms, they have a strong message. Then that's what he's talking about. And this is the song that he's talking about. It's about King David having a yearning to God. King David, when you run away from Saul, so the story with King David and Saul. King David became a son-in-law of Saul, right? You know, he killed Goliath. Saul said, whoever will kill Goliath, I'll make it, give him my daughter. David killed him. And David and Saul had to live up to his promise. And David became so popular by the Jewish people that Saul started to be afraid it'll take over. And Saul, basically what today we would describe it, bipolar. One day he loved them, another day he hated them. And then in King David, he used to play on the harp and used to relax Saul. And then Saul wanted, it was terrible. That one of the times that Saul was running after David, he ended up in the desert of in the Judean desert, and there he was praying how much he was yearning for God. He wants to be sitting in the house of God. That's what this prayer was said. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Who was reading? Go ahead.
When we thirst for closeness to God, the very yearning serves to quench our thirst, at least to some extent, because it elevates us to the level for which we pine. As the Baal Shem Tov said, "A person is found where his desire is found." This is emphasized during the Sefirah days, which are days of yearning for the giving of the Torah, which is why we count the days until the holiday.
Continue. That's the main part. King David said,
"My soul thirsts for you, my flesh yearns for you. So too in holiness I should see you."
Okay, it says here, King David says, "My soul is thirst to you, and I yearning to God, and I wish. When I will be in the temple, I should have the same desire, the same missing of the temple as I have now." You know, many times, what is happening? Now I miss the Rebbe so much. But I was in 770. I didn't get up to every service on time. I missed many opportunities I could be with the Rebbe because I took it for granted. That King David is saying, "I wish I have such a yearning to you. I wish when I will be in the temple, I will have the same desire that I have now." That was King David was saying. Continue.
The Alter Rebbe interpreted the verse in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. "If only I should see you in holiness," i.e., when on a low spiritual level in a dry and barren land, a person nevertheless yearns for the highest levels of holiness. Keep going.
Yeah. Then he says, why, what's the purpose of yearning? What is going on here?
Is that it? Page 10 or 11?
Yeah, it's here. He's missing something. Okay, go ahead.
"The reason, because of the power of yearning. The yearning itself can bring you to the level you yearn for, even from the lowest spiritual state." The Rebbe concluded, "There is a song for the Alter Rebbe with the words, 'Tzama lecha nafshi,' my soul thirsts for you."
Yeah, I want to give you the song, but to play for you the song in a minute. But it says that the yearning itself is satisfying. That's what it says. The yearning itself is satisfying. And that's you yearning to God, yearning to God. Why are you driving yourself crazy? Why are you climbing on the walls? You cannot get there. You're getting there. Yearning is a level of getting there. You get closer. Every time you're yearning to God, you get some of it. You don't get to the full level. You want the temple. I want to be in the temple. I cannot be in the temple. You're getting a little closer. This is satisfying. That's what you learned before. Menachem Av, that yearning to God is a little bit of the temple.